Hi, Andrew Dignam here from D&G Kelly Duncan, your local estate agents and auctioneers. Our services include property sales, valuations, property lettings and property management. Philip Kelly, our MD, and myself have almost 30 years local expertise and experience. Call us today on 057 93 25050 or email us on info@dngkellyduncan.com, and you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Thank you all for your continued business locally. Best wishes for 2021. Please stay safe and well.
Broadcasting live from the little town of Clara, County Offaly, it's What's the Story with Lloyd Bracken. Get in touch today through all our social channels and have your say. Oh, and thanks for listening. Now it's over to you, Lloyd. What's the story?
Hi everyone, very welcome back to What's the Story with myself, Lloyd Bracken, coming to you live here from Raheen in Clara, County Offaly. I hope you're all well and in good form. Great reaction last week to the Frank Fury podcast, amazing feedback, and it's very welcome and thank you very much. Don't forget, as always, if you want to get in touch with the show, you can email me here at littletownmed@gmail.com or indeed PM the Little Town Media Facebook page. Also, if you'd like to get involved as a sponsor of one of the podcasts, you can get in touch there too. Right, on to my guest this week. My next guest on the show is very well known around Ireland for his lifetime involvement in GAA, and he has spent all of his life dedicated to Clara GAA here in town. And he's here to talk to me about that and so much more. Michael Sheridan, what's the story?
Thank you very much, Lloyd, for having me on.
You're very welcome. I'd just like to get a handle on what COVID in 2020 was like for Michael Sheridan. Generally an outgoing person, golfing in GAA. So what was 2020 like?
Well, it was a disaster, really, with the COVID. And when it was announced first, we all thought, oh, this will be gone in a month or two, like the flu long ago. But no one could ever envisage that it was going to be here nearly a year later. And it curtailed everything. Like the school in Moore, for instance, they have a granddaughter playing there. They're in an All-Ireland final and they wouldn't play it. And it's a devil to be once in a lifetime in an All-Ireland final and not to get a chance of playing it. Yeah. But everything else, like, you know, we've simple things. Training of players, couldn't go up and against small groups. Disaster, really, for young lads trying to exercise.
Yeah.
And why there was such a clamp down. And, you know, even the law of draw. Yeah. Bingo has gone. And there was elderly people and young people that enjoyed bingo for the last 40 years in Clara.
Because it was a huge social outlet for
them. It was, of course. And we felt that we ran a good job as well. And it was fair to people and enjoyed it. And they met their friends and they had a chat and a bit of a crack. And that's what life's all about. But I was amazed at one thing that happened, and I didn't think it had happened, is that the All-Irelands would get to be played. And it was an amazing thing for the GAA that they got through that. It has been a terrible year, and we hope, please God, that it's gone behind us and we'll never see the lake again. As the person said long ago, it's harder than man and beast, you know.
Michael, if I asked Angela, what was Michael Sheridan like in lockdown, what would she tell me?
Oh, she'd say he was okay. Well, I missed getting out to, you know, going to matches, and you missed all of that. The only thing that saved the day a little bit was when the weekends came, you had matches on television and off you were playing. But it wasn't the same because the atmosphere, you can't bring the atmosphere back to your own house.
Yeah.
Like, you know, imagine. You're listening to a commentator on the radio, and that's what we're listening to most of the time, or on the computer, and you're following games. But it's not the same as being at a match,
right. Because
you have to have a bit of a chat with the people around you. And
the post-mortem after the match.
Well, even during the match you have it. Why did he miss that ball, or why did he give that pass? But, you know, Angela didn't mind. Like, we took the lockdown pretty serious. I'm lucky that we have sons and daughters around and grandkids, and they do the shopping and that.
Would you be happy to take the new vaccine, Michael?
Definitely. Looking forward to it.
I just wanted to get Michael Sheridan's take on that. Michael, first of all, take me back. You were born in 1940, grew up in Kilcorsy to your father, Peter, and your mother, Mary Jo. What are your memories from that time?
Well, my memories are very good from that time because when I was born, I was the first one to be born in Kilcorsey. John, elder brother, was born in the New Road. And then my mother and father moved up to bought a farm there that belonged to Blackburns. And right beside Goodbody's house in Clarendon, there was a big boring down. We lived in a two-story house, 500 yards down the field. And there was a boring down in it. And no matter what you put on it in gravel, and it was always wet and it was always mucky. And we were all young kids coming up and going to school. And my mother and father, he'd be always delivering milk and coming up to boring. And it was a tough thing. And we had no electricity down there. Had our own pump there. You know, there was no such thing as water from anywhere else. The pump, and you had to go and put a drop in and raise it and get it going. But it was a great pump, and you had your own water. And then you had the rainwater, of course. And we were near the river where we were at that time. If you wanted to drop a soft water, but then you had the barrels. You washed your hair that time with the soft water. Shampoo would be scarce enough, you know, back in those times. But, you know, we had thrashings down there. I remember coming in, I was a young lad, and coming down. And then the boring was bad before they came. But when no one came in with a big tractor and the big roof wheels, it was a disaster coming up and then, because they cut up everything and down as far as the yard and had the thrashing and, you know, drawing down the bales and everything else, and people bringing them in from different people around. Of course, you'd bring in a few to get them thrashed there. That's what went on at that time. And all the neighbours helped. There was a great atmosphere that time, you know, with all people that came to help. And you'd see it on television that time, but the neighbours came in for a thrashing, and it was like a celebration, you know, to be the food, a few drinks, a bit of a sing-song, and a great atmosphere. And then to go on to some other house the next day, could be a mile away, and they'd have another thrashing. But that was one of the things. But the boring, and my mother and father said, right, you know, this is all, we were all young and coming up to boring, and you get your shoes polished going to school, and again you get to the top of the boring, they were all mucky, and, you know.
Which was a busy house, Michael.
Oh, it was, of course, a busy house. Like, and but then, being a farmer's house, the great advantage you had your own milk, you had your potatoes and turnips, and, you know, all you wanted was a bit of meat. You had your eggs, killing odd chicken and having them of a Sunday. And that was the thing that, and then you had neighbours that throw you over a goose in that time. We had neighbours around us that throw a goose over and that, you know, and a turkey. You know, and neighbours were terrific that time. And then there was another man who come down and he'd have rabbits. At that time, you'd eat a rabbit. I wouldn't look at one now, counting the myxotosis. But that time, you'd be delighted. The O'Hara's arter would be out and you'd be shooting. And Mrs. O'Hara come down to our house and she'd have two or three rabbits, all skinned and ready for the pot. And you'd love it. And I remember I got one years ago there, a chap I worked with years ago. Lord of mercy, he died since. Mark Malay gave me a rabbit. And Angela cooked him. We couldn't look at him, only on the plate, and that was it. But there was great times, like...
You paint a great picture.
Ah, yeah.
It was lovely.
And it was great. Like, well, like, there was a big orchard there. There was every kind of trees. Being a Protestant house, you know, Protestants went in for the gooseberries and the blackberries and all the kind of fruit trees, pears and apples. And we had the advantage of all them. During the summer then, your apple tarts, and my mother was a great baker, and she'd love making apple tarts, and
that brings back a
brown bread and
a
all
sad
of that.
Memory for you, Mike.
It does, yeah, it does. Ah, sure, there were great times, but sad times too, you know. But it was something that you can't live again, you know. Living down there, it was beautiful at that time, and great crack. We were all growing up together, and out in the front of the house, you'd be playing hurling and football. And that time, you'd be lucky if you had an old hurling ball, it'd be an old one come from somewhere, found in a ditch somewhere. You know, sometimes Tom Fallon, different fellas met him, worked in the factory, and they made up hurling balls, and we'd had them out there on football. And that's what it was like. Like, you know, it was great. A big fireplace, plenty of turf, and, you know, a great crack, really. But the thing about it is you had to always plan when you lived down there. As I said to you, we had no electricity, so you had to have the paraffin and put it into the lights and have them for a night, and candles. You always had to make sure you had those, and matches to light them. Then a great advantage came was a tilly lamp. The tilly lamp was an advance on the globe and the ordinary light that you had to wicks in, and it brought up the paraffin into the wick. The tele lamp was a fierce advance on the old globe lamp, and then as well as what had happened with the globe lamp as well, sometimes it wouldn't be burning that clear. You had a sort of an air thing you could get, and the globe would go black, and then it'd be showing very little light. But you must remember that we were trying to do our exercises for school with a lamp, and it'd be on the table, and everyone would be trying to do their own little bits and that. And that was in 1950. We moved out of there. We built a new house in 1950 up the road, up at the top of the road. And the reason that my father and mother decided, well, the boreen, number one, break your heart going up and down it would muck. Number two, my mother was, you know, living down there, well away from everybody. And, well, then you came up, and the first thing you had was you had water. You had toilet. And that was a big change. And you had your hot water. You know, everything had to be, the water below in the old house, there was no such thing as having hot water, only boiling it. The other thing that we had on in the old house, and you'd hear people talking about him, listening to Michael O'Hare. But we'd be listening to matches of a Sunday, and there was what you call a wet battery and a dry battery. But the wet batteries, you'd have to bring them down to Kenny's that time, and you get them charged. And you'd have to make sure you had a couple for the Sunday, because it wouldn't do if it went off and Michael O'Hare in the middle of a match. You had to make sure that you had a spare battery there ready to put it in and listen to the radio. And then you'd had all the music as well, Cayley House, and there'd be a lot of different things. And then the other thing that started coming in at that time was that channel, I just can't remember it now, Luxembourg. And you'd be getting Luxembourg in, and that was all different music again, you know. And you had, of course, Sean O'Callaghan on every Sunday night, all the results from all over the country. Different matches and that, right, you know. So
that was a busy radio then.
It was a busy radio.
Michael, take me into the Clara town that time and give me a sense of what it was like back then.
Well, at that time, you know, when you came down down Clara town, the one thing that was there at the time, the Goodbodies had the big houses up, like Harold Goodbodies was beside us, and then you had Eric Goodaby Lowe. They were good old employers. They had five or six walking in the houses there, women and men, you know, doing work. And then you came down as far as the convent. They had five or six, and the priest house had five or six people working. See, wages were small, and people could afford what they were paying them, which wasn't much, like, but there was no one getting big wages. And then you came down, and the thing you nearly always see coming into town, if you were going to school, the road men would be out sweeping the roads, you know, and you'd be chat to them as you passed them by. But you came down then as far as the school, and we were in the old school. The girls were in the convent school, which is the old school at the time, and you had what you called the laundry room, was the room next to the road, and there was a railing around that. And then there was the old school and a yard, and all small. There'd be two classes maybe in one school, and the same on ourselves. The boys' school was small. It had two big rooms, and there'd be two classes in some of them, and then you had the hut where Mr. McNamara and Brother Bernard taught. And then you had Brother Hillary was next to the road. And you had, beside her was, there was a room that they had kept all the turf in. Because there was nothing heat in the schools that time, only the pot-bellied stove. And there was one of them in every room to try and heat it. The people that got the most heat was the teachers, because it was right beside them. And that. But that's the way it was. There was no such thing as radiators or anything like that. And that's what was in the schools at that time. The union went on, and there was a couple of little shops. Beside the parochial hall, there was a couple of little shops there, little sweet shops there. And then on down from that end, you had Billy Wire shop, ice cream. Anthony Phelan had a shop right where Billy Kerrigan's was, now where the school is there, beside Heine's. Of course, Heine's shop was there as well.
Did you have any money to buy it in these shops?
Oh, well, like, you wouldn't need a lot of money because things were cheap. You know, there's only a penny or twopence for things. Like, at that time, if you had a pound, you had a fortune, you see. When you went up to River Street then, you went on up along it, and you had two shops there, and they were owned by the co-op, who later transferred up to where Richie Rex had afterwards, and Ardskull Kieran, well, not Ardskull, but St. Kieran's College was there. They bought the co-op. They made a new building up there, and they sold them two houses. That was where Dan Quinn bought one of them, and there was a man came into Clara and had a chip shop there, Mick Ward, beside Martin Flattery's there. That was where Mrs. Brazel bought afterwards. But that was a chip shop, and he had a Hackney car as well.
So it sounded like Clara was thriving back
then.
Oh,
it was, yeah. Well, there was a lot of shops to see. And you went up along and you had plenty of sweet shops there. Galls. Beside them then you had Galvin's, Mrs. Galvin. the thing you'd always see in the window, you're passing by, you see a cat in the window, and you'd be going in and you'd be buying sweets inside in, and you're hoping the cat wouldn't let me out of them. But I often think about now, people talking about washing their hands and everything, but that time, things were thrown out nearly on the side of a shop and people bought them and that was it. And it didn't do them any harm.
No, different time.
Different times,
better immune system, would you reckon?
It was, I'd say. But maybe people were eating healthier. You know, there was less prepared foods. But that time in Clare, you had about 10 or 12 pubs as well. And you had D.E. Williams' there, which was a paper shop. And you had Galls before that. And you had Mrs. Innes come in there then. Finn and Quigley was there originally. He had a shop there. Everyone was making a living out of sweets and all the shops you had, and everyone made a living. And Williams's were a huge shop like that. And they had five or six people, a man in the yard looking after coal and potatoes and everything like that. They were all big employers as well. And you had White's shop, three or four clients, butchers, you know.
And like, there's people listening to this, sorry to cut across you, and they're thinking, I remember that shop. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. What happened to all these shops?
Well, you see, a lot of people, they got old and they weren't married, that nobody belonged to them. And then the shops faded away. Whoever they had belonged to went away and they went off to work somewhere else, like the Quigleys. They were all in Clara. Finnan was there and the brothers and that. But they went to Mullingar, to Dublin, Ivor went to America. They all went different places to work.
So just nobody there to take over, basically.
That's right, yeah. You know, and even where the Bank of Ireland is now, that was Quigley's shop, and he was a tailor there originally, were there. That's the way it is. All of those people, like John Joe Galvin, another complete family gone. Noah Galvin left in Clara now.
Farrell shop there, of course.
Farrell shop's so locked up this 20 year.
What do you make of Clara nowadays, Michael? I'm very interested to hear your take on this.
Well, I'm disappointed to see so many shops and so many houses. And I blame the council a little bit for this and the lawmakers. Like, I believe that there's 40 houses in Clara that could be renovated and people living in without too much expense. And I've said this to the TDs over the years, but a lot of things are in red tape and people own them and they don't know who owns them. They could all be converted in. Councils should have power after a reasonable amount of time to take over these houses and pay whoever owns them, if they can find them, so much money and settle it and go and build. Like, even up in Church Street, you have houses locked up there. There's 40 years. Since I'm in Church Street since 63, and there's houses that were people were living in when I went there, but nobody has lived in them now. There's 50 years, and they're still sitting there. And why they can't be renovated and made into houses, maybe knock down some of them. Like, this thing you're talking about, it's preserved, and it's this, and it's that. Preserve is one thing. But you don't preserve something that has no character. But they're holding up space on main streets and it could be in houses for people just crying out for houses and cheaper houses.
Did you ever think of entering politics in your life, mate?
I got the chance.
Did you?
I did, on more than one occasion. Angela didn't want me to go into politics.
You were too busy with everything else.
Well, she said, there's too many people calling here for GA. If they start calling for politics, you'll want to get another secretary. There was one time the postman said to me that you have the most posts in Clara as the goodbodies. You know, that there was posts to my house every day with GA from county level and every other level, you know. But that's the way it goes. But no, I got a chance on more than one occasion. And there was a lot of pressure put on for me to go on local council more than once.
Never sorry you didn't.
Ah, well, I would have liked to have a go ahead, all right, but then you get on in years and you say, maybe I was better off not. But I'm thinking going back now a good few years, but I got the chance and a lot of pressure from a lot of people.
I'd say there was a lot of lads in that council saying, thank God, Mick Sheridan didn't go for this. We'd never get over meeting for starters anyway.
They probably wouldn't. They'd have to extend the hours, yeah.
Mick, take me back for a second. You mentioned the coal in the school and the potbelly stoves. Did you like school?
I did like school, yeah. I like school, always like school. I suppose one thing, we were great with the brothers because we were on Kilcursie Road and all of the teachers, by and large, they all lived up in Lahinch. So you were up the road with them or you were down the road with them and they were on bicycles. It wasn't like now where they're gone by in cars and you don't see them, but they were there and they were up and down the road and they were walking a lot of the times because they were out for exercise as well. And you'd often walk up the road and we'd have a chat. I went from that on to the tech and I liked that as well. And we cycled to the Tech. A good few lads from Clara cycled at that time into the Tech. And your father was a bit ahead of me, just a little bit. And he was in the Tech then as well. But there was lads from Ballycomer, and we made friendship at that time. And we'd still be friends today. A good few have died since now, but you know lads from all over. Like Tullamore Tech, there was no such thing as a Tech in Clara. But the Tullamore Tech was there, right on O'Connor Square. And there was lads from all over Ballycommon, out Geishel.
And what was it like in a cold winter's morning, getting up out of bed and thinking I have to cycle the Tullamore? Was it normal?
It was normal. Like, sure, you'd have an old shotgun in. There was three or four of us together. And I'll tell you a good one that happened one day. Tom Hogan and Tom Hogan and old Stanley. I was a good few cycling, but we swapped bicycles on the way in. We said for a change we'd swap bicycles. So I swapped with Tom Hogan, and Tom wobbled off mine and into mine, and the two of them got spokes out of them. And we said, yeah, let's have our own bicycles back, you know. But like, no, you didn't mind, but you had to chat, and the bicycle belly come and might catch up on you, and you'd be along with him, and you'd be on into Tullamore, and you, like Davy Sheridan or and Sean Sheridan out from Tubber, and their relations your own, they'd be all going to the Tech because there was nothing else around. Education, like, didn't really come in until 66, to bring in the free education to go. There was nothing around our area in Clara. There was no secondary school of any description in Clara. You know, there was nothing soft in our day. Yeah, you hop on a bicycle, and if you wanted to be educated, you had to go.
So from the Tech in Tullamore, Michael, you must have frequented many's the dance hall and one the Roseland in Moat. Is that where you met your life?
That's where I met Angela, yeah, in the Roseland, yeah.
Take me up to that night.
Ah, sure. No, well, Roseland, I'd have been going to the Roseland a good bit, but we went dancing everywhere around the Midlands at the time, and there'd be cars going and you'd be getting a lift, and Athlone was another great venue, but the Roseland had a bigger bands and the better bands and bigger crowds.
Yes. But Mick, the question we want to know is, did you ask Angela to dance or did she ask you to dance?
Oh no, there was no such thing as women asking men to dance at all, unless it was a lady's tie. So I asked her and that was it. And
a Mullingar woman.
A Mullingar woman, yeah.
How did you manage to get over to Mullingar, Michael? What was the commute like over?
Ah, the commute was good. Because I'll tell you, the advantage of Mullingar was, there was dogs down in Mullingar every Saturday night and every Tuesday night. So there was all this Clara lads going to Mullingar.
So there was two excuses to go to Mullingar.
And me and Angela would choose a night or a Saturday night, and that was it. Your lift, Paddy Mara and the boys, if you're going. And then when I got a car, I was carrying them.
You were the non-drinker, isn't it?
Yeah, I was ringing in, and there'd be a dog looking in over your shoulder in the back of the car. Paddy Colligan and all the boys, and Eugene, and you know, and but no, Mullingar. Well, Mullingar was a venue that I danced in before I met Angela as well. There was all this great dancing in the county hall of Mullingar. There were certain places that had great reputation, and there was an organisation in Mullingar time that had a race course. And they'd have a dance every month, like a big dance. And that was always a great venue. And, right. You know, be packed out, be people there dressed to the nines and demand, you know.
Right. I'm going to ask a stupid question now, but was there ever a chance Mick Sheridan was going to move to Mullingar?
Never a chance. No, never a chance. No, no.
Actually, three kids then, Dorothy, Peter and Elaine.
Yes.
For a lot of your life and Angela's life, your family lived away. Across the border,
yeah.
In USA and wherever. And like, what was it like to finally get them all back on home soil then?
It was great, but I'll tell you the truth. I enjoyed when they were in America. Because I was able to go to America every year, free board and lodgings. And I was delighted when they were in America because, you know, it was great for me every year. We went up to America every year when they were out there and played golf. That's when I started playing golf out there with Mel and a few of his friends out there, Pat French and a few of the lads. Playing bad, I might as well tell you. I'd be playing a lot better now, but we played in some of the best courses out in America at the time, but it's unbelievable. We'd be on the road out there. I would think about bad of getting up. We'd be on the road at 7 o'clock to go to play golf because you could only get an early tea time. We played out on the black course in Bedpage where the Open in America was played afterwards. So, like, there's great memories and a lot of great golf courses. But that's why I liked America, and Mel and Dar and Elaine and Peter, they showed us all over the place. And one thing about America, you could go. You might never bring a coat. The weather was deadly. You know, and you could go to golf. You're not such thing as bringing anything. Just play your golf in your shirt and go out and go on tour. Weather was terrific. And I met a great lot of people out in America. I met a lot of friends and that, you know. I'd never have went to America, only the kids were out there. Well, I went out with Offaly, when Offaly went out in 83, and it was terrific. But I always had an ambition as a young lad that I would have liked to have gone to America myself, but never then made a break. Well, when you get married, then that's it. You don't go, I built a house and your roots are settled in.
Yeah.
But
you've grandkids now, Mick.
Yeah.
What's granddad Mick Sheridan like?
Oh, I sure have great. Great crack with the kids and terrific. And a great help to us as well, you know. Mm. And it's great to see them all involved in the GAA and playing the games, because it gives you an excuse. And one thing that I'm really proud of is the way the ladies' football got going. Because it's terrific to see all the girls play in the GAA. And even
Brilliant. Even
Caitlin out in Thailand, she got the award last year as the best Gaelic player in Thailand. And not too many people can say that. Not too many grandfathers can say that. And she got it again this year, you know.
Well done, Caitlin. I tell you what, Mick, what we have here. I have a little piece here from Peter and then from Caitlin. So have a little listen there.
Okay, right.
It's a great honour for us for our dad to be interviewed. And for us, he continues to be the husband, the dad, the grandpa, and the friend to many, and who was always there to help and support when called upon. As you will probably gather when you go to interview me, Dad, the GAA has been his life, and for us growing up, it took centre stage in our life, whether it was going to matches or umpiring while he reffed, fixing something in the social centre, or sitting in the car outside someone's house for hours and hours while an ad hoc meeting took place inside. He was always being a great support to us and is always there when we need him. And if you're ever doing a job around the house and need something, it'll be either in the shed, if Father doesn't believe in showing anything away, or he will know where it can be acquired. My dad would never ask anyone to do anything he wasn't willing to do himself, but as many will attest, he would ask, have you a minute to spare, you better have a good excuse or he would end up gone for days helping out. Memories for us growing up always comes back to the factory holidays during the summer and Christmas. This was the time when we got Daddy back from the GAA for a few weeks to ourselves, and we always managed to get away as a family. At Christmas we would spend the 2 weeks in Mullingar at my grandma's, and during the summer we went on holidays around Ireland or to the UK to our aunts and uncles. We would get loaded into the Hillman Hunter, end up in a tent in Achill or towing a caravan to the far end of Donegal. In fact, the girls reminded me of a trip we had to Achill one time. We arrived in the dark and pitched a tent only to realise there was a storm brewing. We woke up and with the tent was blown away down the nearby cliff, and we ended up spending the night in the car. Like, I know this is a short bit, but thanks again for the opportunity for saying a few words, and best of luck with future podcasts. Thanks.
Hi Lloyd. First of all, thank you for the opportunity to say something on behalf of all the grandkids. I think I can speak for us all when I say how proud we all are of our grandpa. He always shows us how proud he is of each and every one of us, how proud he is of his own children, his family, his friends, and also the obvious one, Clara GAA and Clara Town. You can't mention my grandpa without talking about the GAA, and it definitely has had an effect on us, and it has been a huge part of all of our lives. Growing up, I always thought my grandpa was famous, because anywhere you'd go and you said you were a Sheridan from Clara, more often than not they'd ask if you were a relation of Mick Sheridan. He has always been so supportive of us in every aspect of life. It was a rare occasion if he missed one of our matches. Grandpa, we all love you so much and we are so proud of you. Thank you for all you do for us.
Thanks very much, Peter, for your words. And Caitlin, some things I had forgotten about there, but we had great times, there's no doubt about it. As they were growing up, we went to Dublin, we swapped houses for years and years too with John. And we were delighted to go up to the seaside, and he was delighted for his kids to come down to the country, you know.
So Peter reckons there you have every tool and nut and bolt in that shed down there. Are they all yours?
The biggest job is finding them.
And don't ask Mick Sheridan, has he a minute to spare? Talk to me. So like so many of your generation, he started in Goodbody's factory. What are your memories from that? I know you wrote a lovely piece in the Reflections book. I was reading that recently there, and it seems you have fond memories from your times there.
I enjoyed Goodbody's for every minute I was there. There's no doubt about it. It was a terrific place to work. I met great friends and still friends today. That's one thing about Goodbody's. It's like the GAA. When I was working in Goodbody's and when we were playing football, there was, I think, 14 or 12 or 13 of the team worked in Goodbody's. The only exceptions were the like of Eamon Fleming, who was in Goodbody's at one time when he served his time down, he went on to Boora. and Johnny Keenan and Louis Keenan, Frank McLaughlin. There was only a couple that didn't walk beside us. Well, it's easy getting word about matches. They were all walking around good buddies. The Bush Telegraph. If you meet switch up and tell them there's a match on, then here's a training.
That's how it worked.
That's how it worked. And it was the same in good buddies, like with people, you know, you'd be chatting about matches. And that's why you didn't mind going to work and you all had an old chat. Even women there fixing sewing machines and doing work. Everybody was interested in the GAA and in what was going on in Clara. So it was a great comradeship in good buddies and very close people like together. And everybody, sure, there was 500 working in good buddies that time. You know, there's dangers if you were on the road and people coming down at dinner time and that. And we had great occasions as well in good buddies. And your father was involved as well. NISO was a thing, the National Industrial Safety Organization. We started, I was chairman of the Midland branch of that, and there was a quiz going on, and it was sponsored by Irish Life Insurance, and we got involved with teams from good buddies, and two of the teams won All-Irelands, and that was a great thing, and we had the quizzes, and we had the top men from Irish Life down to presentations and good buddies. That was a great occasion for the like of good buddies as well, to be involved at that level, and going to an All-Ireland final, and we had a great occasion 1 year. And your father and we were all brought as guests to the Gresham Hotel. The weekend we had there was unreal. Tom Welch and your father and your mother was there and Brendan Mara and Trisha. Everyone by two, you know, Marion Nolan, you know, great Vincent Dignam. We had a great crack and we went round to different quizzes around and I was quiz master at a lot of them and was on the teams and that. But good buddies were very accommodating to give us time to train and all of that, you know. But it is a great company to work in because what I had, what very few people had, and that was in before I even went into good buddies, but they had a doctor regular there and a nurse. Great facilities, really, and they had a canteen and there was dances there and there was food and everything. They were before their time, really, and there was always a bit of overtime there and there was good money in it because the money was small everywhere, but it is as good in good buddies as anywhere else in the world.
I have another little piece of audio here, Mick, from a man that you were on his podcast. So he said, well, I have to be on his podcast.
Well, Mick, it's great to know you're on the podcast there with Lyde. And I'm delighted, great old friend down the years. Worked in the factory all our life, had great laughs, had down matches and got put off and everything. Great time, and then we cycled to Galway, of course, Tommy Egan and yourself and Sean Kennedy, and had great holidays. Oh, we always seemed to be together, going everywhere and anywhere. And when we were finished in the factory, we were still working together with Sean Cushion there, Midland Sacks. Sean gave us a start, and we'd be down in the lake fitting the boat covers. We were still having the crack and the laugh and all together. And Mick, we're still around. I moved down beside you. You can't get away from me. And we're good old neighbours there now. We meet every day and have the chat, and it's great. And you and Angela and all the family. So make the best of luck there on the podcast. Good man.
Thanks very much, Paddy. Yourself and Kathleen, thanks very much. Friends all our lives, yeah, that's it. There's no doubt about it. But that was a trip. It's interesting about that trip to Galway. We went to Galway. That was about 1957.
Cycling now.
Cycling. We didn't realise, I suppose, Galway was as far because you went on an excursion that time to Galway and there was a train in there. But we said we'd cycle to Galway and we brought a tent. We stopped in Ockram on the way down and we had a Primus stove and the whole lot to make the tea and got on to Galway that evening. We went out to Salt Hill, got on to a field and we met a man there and he turned out that he was a man that was from Tupper. He was a lep from Tupper, went down working with farmers down there. And we said to him, would it be any harm if we were to camp in this villa at all? He says, you'd be dead on. Go ahead and camp away. So we set up the camp anyway and got the Primus going again and had to feed. And right on the back of Salt Hill, just 300 yards from Salt Hill, from the prom, that's where we camped for a week. And we cycled all over, out to Connemara, Spittle, crossed through the country.
Great time,
there's no doubt about that. And never fell out. Around
twice.
And but it was a marvellous holiday. I went dancing at night. There was dancing in the sea pint and there was dancing in a place called the Hangar. That's the thing about Galway. There was a great atmosphere 60 years ago, 57, whatever it is, 63 years ago, whatever. But great memories, and got home, came home of a Sunday, and great memories, though.
Michael, let's take on to your GAA life. Firstly, who was your influence in getting involved in the GAA back in the day?
The influence for me would be my father, really. And the Sheridans were always involved in the GAA. Being in the New Road, Flemings Field beside him, and my father was always involved, and he would have been an officer. He wouldn't be chairman. He'd be on the committee at the time when we were growing up, and he'd be there, and Paddy Nocton and all them, and Peter Nolan was growing up at the time. But my father was the big influence for us in the GAA, because he was involved all his life into it.
Was he a player himself?
Oh, he was, yeah. Winning the major medal in 1934. And the first county final that was played in O'Connor Park was in the intermediate hurling final. Clara and Eden Derry, and he was on the team there. And it was a great occasion, because to say that you won the first final in O'Connor Park when it was inaugurated there in 1934 was terrific. But it's very poor records, which disappointed me. I searched everywhere for them, for programmes around. Of course, there was no such thing as programmes at the time. Writing on a paper, on a yoke and throw it away like a pencil. And but he was there involved in that, and all his life then he was involved training teams up along, and with minor teams and juvenile teams, and Paddy Maher would be there, and Micheál Guinan then, and the priest. But there was a great old committee, and there was always a great year. But you must remember, growing up in the 50s, there wasn't much more around than the GAA, you know. If you were GA, you were GA, and there was always training in Flemings Field. If you got it, we wouldn't get it every year because you'd be falling out, them or that, you know. But that was the way it was. She'd want to feel some years that they wouldn't have enough of grass and they wouldn't let you in. But I gave you an interesting thing about this one night. We were training up in Flemings Field, and we said it was the Friday night. We were training for minor football. I brought everyone dressed and brought their clothes up along, and we trained away all night anyway, and we looked up a few times up to the tugged out under the ditch, up at the Flemings Field, up on the hill. And we seen the calves and the pulling clothes around, or we thought they were rags. And we didn't realise when we went back up ourselves, it was our clothes the calves were eating and chawing. So there was no Kelly that night in the Brookle Hall. We had to go home. The clothes were all destroyed. And it wasn't like you'd have a whole load of shirts when you go home, but the night was ruined then, you had to go home, and that was it. They were great days in Flemings Field. You cycled up there, and my involvement in the GAA started in the boys' school, like in the with brother Nicholas. Nicholas was in charge of the teams, and we played in the first under 12 match in Offaly, boarding school, in 1949, and we won the final. A lot of the lads on that team kept playing the whole way up along. Davy Hogan and Dennis and all the lads, and kept playing Willie Nolan, Paddy Nolan. I don't want to mention too many of them because I'm going to miss someone, but all the names are in the book. But we played the whole way up along, won down under 12, went to minor or under 14 finals in the school. We were never that successful. What happened with under 14 was you went to a tech and that you were never there till you were 14. There was country teams might have an older team and they'd beat you at under 14, because fellas had left and gone to secondary school and different things. You always lost players. And we went to finals, but we never were that lucky to win them. When you go to finals and you'd be defeated. But Peter Nolan and the boys, they won a lot of them before that. And that was a real start of the GAA. And when we were growing up, we were lucky enough. Peter Nolan, as a young lad, was a powerful young lad. Legs strong, and Louie and all the boys and the Martin Flattery's and them, they were all playing. Patrick Flattery, I seen all them playing. They were a few years ahead of us now, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years.
Were these lads you were looking up to?
Oh, they were, yeah. Well, Peter was the idol of every young lad in Clara, because he was the star. And as a minor, he was still a big man, and, you know, the one minor in 52. You kept looking at the teams ahead of you, and, you know, you went up and you were training with them. It's funny, we were only young lads, maybe 5 years younger than them, and you were hopping into the lads. Peter Nolan was the man that everyone in Clara looked up to as a footballer, because he was, in my estimation, the best centre-half back in Ireland. Now, alone in Clara are an Offaly, but in Ireland. And never got really what he should have got. He should have been brought home from America for the 19... the two, the All-Ireland semi-final and the final in 61.
Well, actually, that answers a question I had, because Clara obviously won in 1960. Yeah. You were on the first winning team. So, meaning they got to name the Offaly captain for 61.
That's right.
And Willie Nolan then captained the team to an All-Ireland final, beaten by Down.
Rob.
But there was a debate, and this is a question from Trevor Kelly in the USA, big GEA fan, of course, good Clara man. And it was debated. He wants to know your opinion. If Peter Nolan was on that team, would they have won?
Well, without a doubt. There's no question about it. In my opinion, we'd have won the 60 and the 61 All-Irelands if Peter was there. Because we're beaten in the semi-final by Down in 60 and in a replay. And if Peter was there, we'd have won that one, we'd have won the next year. It's just unfortunate. Peter got a bit of an injury in a league semi-final or a league final against Kerry the year before, and he had an old injury in his ankle, but he went to London, and then he went on to America, and he got married, but he should have been brought home. But what annoys me, and I suppose we all should have said more at the time, and hindsight's great, but everyone on off this scene, what Peter Nolan done for Clara in the county final of 1960 and the replay. And Peter gave an outstanding display of football in both games. I played beside him. You couldn't catch a ball. Peter owned the middle of the field. And that was it. He owned it. And he was such a strong player. And a drop kick and taking frees. And he had everything. Hands. Caught them there like, you know, the same as you were catching a golf ball now. Peter was up. And no one got off because he came out there like a strong man. But if he was brought home and... I have different ideas of why he wasn't brought home. And I think it would be that someone else that was from a more prominent place would be dropped and Peter would be put in. If they had brought home even Peter and left him as a sub and have him there. But what I didn't realise until the last few years, maybe 10 years ago, I realised Paddy Casey was also in America. Now, Paddy was younger than Mick. Mick was on the team and was a great player, scored a couple of goals in All-Ireland and got injured then. Paddy Casey was a year or two younger than him, and Paddy Casey should have been brought home as well. Paddy Casey played for Offaly 2 years later.
So you reckon two huge mistakes there from Offaly management?
Yeah, of course it was. Like, anyone that would have... I've seen players being brought home to Offaly, to play for Offaly. I won't mention names, but you wouldn't have brought them home if you were in charge. But they were brought home because of who they were and played with Offaly. But Paddy Casey and Peter Nolan should have been brought home for the 60 and 61. But to see the way Peter played and the way he was playing, the best footballer he ever played, and came back afterwards and played with New York here and gave masterful displays. And how we should be so naive not to bring him home. And there's a terrible, the greatest mistake in the Offaly GA of all time.
So still very, very much debatable after all these years then.
Well, it's not debatable to me. I think it is... It was a wrong thing, and there's no point in me. The people are all dead now that made them decisions. Lord have mercy on them all, but it was a terrible decision not to bring home the two of them.
Right. A couple of, obviously, lads on that senior team, Oliver Hall, Peter Nolan, that we mentioned, John Sheridan, your brother, of course you played alongside him, Eamon Fleming, Martin Flattery, John Keenan, Willie Nolan, Tom Egan, Peter Toohey, Johnny Nolan was the captain, Martin Kelly, James Roach, Jimmy Dunn and Louis Keane.
Louis Keane, that's right, yeah. Them young lads, like we came up together, Jimmy and that, but there was other lads that went to England that would have won championships with us as well. Tom Dunn and Davy Hogan, the Derby Grinnan, Mick Strahan. There was all the fellas that left because there wasn't that much work outside good bodies around the Midlands. And if you didn't get into Bordermona, and they were only sort of getting moving at the time, you know, really getting going. And you got a job in Goodbody's or if you had a bit of a farm, but then there was always one or two on the farm and there wasn't room for three or four. And that's why people went off. And then they were influenced by different reasons, maybe girlfriends or that, and they wanted to go and see. I don't blame anyone for going away because anyone that went away from Clara ever got on well. And Tom Dunn and Debbie Hogan, all the boys that went away, Mick Strahan, they all done well out of Clara. You know, they never look back, really.
What was the 1960 homecoming like, Mick?
Oh, sure, unreal. Unreal, on the back of I think there was a bit of a lorry or a tractor, and a lorry. And sure, lucky there wasn't someone killed coming up River Street, like, you know. I'll never forget Joe Gagan of Bailey's Gates. Now, Joe was a lifelong supporter. Joe getting pulled up onto the back of the trailer with a flag wrapped. He always had a flag with Clara Boo on it. And he was getting pulled up and onto the trailer. But, like... You have to remember that final, that there was great teams before that. When we went senior in 1957, they beat Road in the first round, and Road were county champions the year before. And they went on then, and they were beaten in the final by Eton Derry. Following year, they were beaten in the final by Road. The next year, beaten by St. Patrick's, who were all of North Offaly, in the semi-final.
So they were building the process then.
Yeah, exactly. The process was coming for years. Like, it came from a junior. It came from a minor team at 52, right up along into Winnie Junior. That was the first junior in years. Billy Maher, John Malone, there was a lot of lads, Tommy Dolan, a lot of lads came in and helped to win that, and were on the team, and Berg Cowan, you know, and the Winnie Junior, which was hard won, because football in junior at that time, it's tough as nails. It wasn't like the football you're playing with today. To break your leg sometimes if you get that wet, you know, and a big football of size 5. And it was nothing simple. And tackling wasn't simple either.
So, Mick, what do you think of the game today?
Well, you know, like, the hand pass ruined the game. Like, Kerry in Dublin won All-Irelands with foul passing, ball shoved into the net. Like, I don't mind if there was one hand pass, but that should be all there is. Like, they're hand passing it now and they're going round in circles. Long ago you got the ball and you always look forward and you missed a line and went on to the next one. When I would be playing around the middle of the field, what you were always looking for was a half forward or a full forward line. Let the ball into them. That was your job to do. Get into them and let them score.
So you did these Stephen Cluxton short kickouts and all that?
I wouldn't have that at all. I would disallow all of them.
Yeah.
I would say that the ball had to go out to the 50 yards and that was it. And let them go up and catch it and kick it away then. But I wouldn't have that thing at all. It has ruined the game.
But apart from the playing though, look at the fitness now. The what's going into the GEA clubs, obviously Dublin as well. It's huge. But like, what do you make of all that?
They're nearly too professional now. That there's too much training and there's too much. Like, when you see 22 people in a backroom team, a couple of doctors, physio, when you see all of those fellas coming up, backs, trainer, the forward trainer, a goalie coach, you know, what are we at? It's an amateur game and we've let it get out of control, and there's no control on about how many you can have on the backroom teams, and that's completely ridiculous, and that's what has to turn the game the way it is. Long ago you were lucky you had maybe a trainer and selectors in the story, and you'd have someone to rub them, or a physio. He wouldn't even call a physio. It'd be someone to rub the muscles or take out. But now you have hamstrings and you have things that we never heard of nowadays. And you have things happening, the fella's going off. And maybe it's because they're overtrained.
Okay, Mick, I was looking at some of your own stats as a player and also as chairman of Clara GAA, and it makes for a hefty reading. So I'm going to leave this to my resident GAA correspondent, Pádraig O'Mara, and he's going to go through your highlights. Have a little listen to this.
Thanks again for asking me to say a few words about another great Clara Gael, Michael Sheridan. In 2013, Michael stood down as Caherlough of Clara GAA club for after a 24-year spell. He'd given a lifetime of service to Gaelic games in Clara. He represented the club as a player, a referee, and as a long-term officer for over 50 years. Michael was a player when Clara won their first senior football title in 1960 and also in 1964. He refereed the 1972 senior football final and two senior hurling finals in the late 70s and early 80s. A very unique record, as he's been the only member of the club to serve in all three senior officer positions, secretary from 83 to 84, treasurer from 1970 to 1981, and then chairman from 1985 for a year, and then he went in from 1989 to 2013. During his tenure, probably the most successful period in the club, we won 4 senior football titles, 2 junior football titles, and a Leinster junior football title, 3 under-21 football titles, 5 Manor A football titles, 4 under-16 football titles, 2 under-14A football titles, 2 under-12A football titles, and an intermediate hurling title, a junior hurling title, along with numerous underage B hurling championships and many adult titles. The 1990s was probably the most successful period for the club. We won a total of 28 championships, 18 in football and 7 in hurling. One thing people mightn't know about Michael, he was a very avid scoring enthusiast. Michael, along with Eamon Fleming, Lord Tamersham, had a great appetite for scoring. They followed this, especially the ballot group around the country and the county. They won many Leinster County and All-Ireland titles. They were a fantastic group of people, and the club supported them, and especially Michael. He followed them everywhere, as I said. Michael's knowledge of the rules of the association was second to none. I used to love going to county board meetings and county conventions with him because the top table would always be sweating because he wouldn't let them away with anything. He questioned absolutely everything. Just to finish off, back in 2014 we had a night out there and it just showed what the club and what people from around the county taught him, Michael Sheridan. We had a night out for his, retirement from being chairman of the club for 24 years. We had a great night there and every club in the county was represented. So just on behalf of the club again, Michael, I'd like to thank you for your service and ongoing service. You're still selling lahas and still helping out in some way. Just like to wish you and Angela all the best in difficult times. Keep safe and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks very much, Parik, for your words. Thank you.
Now, Parik mentioned, Mick, your retirement due. When did you retire?
You can't retire.
Is that a thing with GAA? You just, that's it. You never retire.
Look, the way it is, you're born into the GAA. I always believe that. Like Parik himself, his father was a secretary, and I seen him, Tommy Egan, be bringing messages to my father. He was on the committee with him, and he get to know him meeting tonight. Down in River Street, there was a little house there, Biddy Rush's. Have a meeting tonight there. And that was it. A handwritten note about a meeting. And like, you're born into the GAA and that's it. And that's why Peter and the girls and the boys, the Dials and all, you're steeped into GAA and you're born into it. And it's like anything else. It's part of you. It's part of your DNA. There's great love of the GAA and Clara. Like, Clara has a unique position in the GAA. Like, they were there from the 15th of December 1884, from the start of the GAA. And there's nobody in Clara, nearly, every man in nearly in Clara at some stage played some GAA. And, you know, like, let be only school or in the, now in schools and different
things. Everybody got to kick a ball.
Everybody got to kick a ball.
Mightn't be great.
Yeah, but, and then they made up their own mind then whether they want to stick at it or not, and Phyllis went off on different paths. But, like, the amount of people that played GAA is unreal. And the amount of friends that I have made, even in Clara, but all over the country in the GAA, and they're friends for life.
Yeah, Parik also mentioned to me offline about the move from a brilliant pitch, probably one of the best pitches, he said, up in Marion Square, and then he moved to your present ground then. So you have some great facilities now. Was that a big step in your chairmanship to do all this?
I'll just give you a little bit of history now that it's no harm to have it on record. When I was growing up, we had no field. We were renting a field and glad to be able to rent one. And there's some years, we were in about 10 different fields in 15 years. And all where there'd be cattle in and cows. And you know what'd be there and what you'd be falling into in your playing games. But one of the better fields we had, of course, was Fleming's field, because the grass was never that long because they all had a good few little calves in the hollow. But that was sort of a lot of games played there. When we were growing up, Fleming's field was, by and large, where we were playing most of them. And then we had Con Foxes, if you could get it. There's a ground field there right beside the swimming pool. What we were always, and even before my father's time, he was chairman, and then Father Riley's time, and all of their time, Paddy Mara, all of their time, they were always on the lookout for a field, but they were never successful. So when we, our committee came in, we were all young and enthusiastic at the time, in 69. And I came on to the committee as treasurer, and Mick Nestor was secretary, and Noel O'Brien was chairman. And a lot of new lads, a jobber, and all a lot of the lads came on to the committee. And we said, right, we're in the Vincent de Paul room at the time for our meetings. That's where we met every Monday night, which is a tradition in the Clara GAA Club for 40 years before that. But then at that time, the GAA was different. You ran more or less the summer. When it came to the winter, matches were over, and there was nothing in maybe till Patrick's Day again, but score started then, and we got talking about score. We'd be there. Eamon Filliman was the first man to talk about it. It was down in Clahan first. It was the talent competition, is what they call it at that time. We got involved, and he said, we should have a go at it. And we started talking about it. Out of that, it was reported that we were there all hours of the night. We were burning all the electricity. And we said, look, we got a huge bill. Well, we paid it anyway, but we had a bit of a row with the man that sent it to us. We paid it anyway. We said, right, we'll have to go and get a place for Rome. We can't have this crack. So we made a decision one night that we'd start looking for a place. And we tried various places in Clara. The hall was idle. In all, it's the Star Ballroom that time. Paddy McCormack and that loan owner, the boys said, right, sure, we should have a go and see what he rented or whatever. Mick Nestor and Nob, I think, and maybe Jobber. A couple of them went down anyway, down, and they met Paddy in at loan. And he said, Ray, I'm interested in selling it, all right. So we made a deal anyway, came back to the meeting then and we made a deal. It took a while for it to go through, a couple of years maybe, but we had it bought. That was in 1969 we bought it, because we hadn't it when Score started, because we had the Score in the parochial hall and the bicycle. But out of that buy, which cost 5,000 something at the time, and it was up to 6 with a bit of interest, again, we got to pay for it. But anyway, we bought that, and that was the first bit of property, and it's no harm saying it, that Clara Gia ever owned it. We had the first three All-Ireland Scoring and Og finals in the hall, which were unbelievable. There was people here from all over Ireland. That was an unbelievable few years in town, but the first one, I'll never forget. They were here from the Rock and Briar. Buses, minivans, Primus stoves. We made fierce preparations. We had about 50 stewards in the hall that time, everyone different jobs. There was a huge undertaking. I was on the committee in Croke Park, and I got it to Clara, and it was the first All-Ireland of Scorn and Oak. There was people in Clara that morning at 11 o'clock, and that wasn't starting at 7 that night. And the money that was spent in Clara that day, people buying things, bits of Delf, and, you know, and we had a meal for the, all the participants in St. Anthony's College that night, turkey and ham, and Donna Codolan was there.
A huge undertaking.
A huge undertaking, you know, and it was the biggest thing that we ever took on. But it was terrific. The letters I got afterwards from all over the country, from different people about how they enjoyed it. We went from that then with the hall, and we had indoor football, and the two main organisers of that were, they did the paperwork, was Brother Sylvester and John Nestor. They done the teams, and it was a big undertaking because 10 or 12 teams playing every Tuesday night and every Thursday night, and you had to have your tables done up and how they were progressing in different groups, and there was also ladies, and there was a great team from Clara Ladies, and Mullingar had a great team. That went on then, and we went on from that then, and we had something to begin to your line now. We had all the rock groups from all over the country. I'd be ringing up fellas there from all over, different managers, and we had
huge bands played down there.
Oh, there was. Yeah, sure, we had the best. But we had groups there, rock groups and that, and funny names, you know. I have a book at home with a whole lot of their names in there, but Peggy's Leg and a whole lot of different names like that. We had crowds coming in from Athlone and from Tullamore, and at that time there was the whole rivalry there at that age group, especially with a few jars. They'd always be sure over
50 stewards on.
Oh, we had, yeah. We used to have the fierce stewards down all together. You'd have to be, lads come in with boots up halfway up their legs and the trousers further up. There was great dances and great discos. The indoor football was unbelievable. There was teams here from Roscommon, as far down as Borr, Kilbeggan, Mullingar, all over Offaly. The amount of money that made for the club at the time, because it was two nights a week and there was a few bob coming in every night, you know, and we had an old shop there as well in the hall and that. But it created fierce flow of money, like.
So soccer was making money for you.
Oh, no, it wasn't soccer. Indoor football. You want to listen carefully now. Don't be going on with that crack. That near never came into my vocabulary at all. And
I just throw that in.
Well, it's no harm throwing it in. That's a bit you can edit out. But, you know, and then we went from that. We bought a hall, and then we were still looking for a field, and we tried. So we went out, every one of us, we went out all over the place looking at fields and walking them and meeting farmers and that. But anyway, we tried to buy fields everywhere. And we tried to buy Goodbody's, was selling up in Kilcorsey. That's in front of Dyle. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Desmond Goodbody's house up there. And there was about 50 acres of land with it. So we got approval from Croke Park and all to go ahead through John Dowland and Lord Mercy. We put a bid on it. We heard in a week afterwards that it was sold to Mr. Flynn. And then I met Desmond then and was talking to him about it and said, one field would have done us and that. But he said, would that field up there of ours up at Marion Square not suit you? I said, it would if we could buy it. I said, it's suits fine. So we put it up then for sale, but just privately between ourselves and the soccer club. And we bought it. And that was it. We had a good bit of work to do on it, but we spent too much money on it. We built the dressing rooms there, and we put the banks around it, silver sands, and we went a little bit mad spending money that we hadn't got. But anyway, we got through it, and it was a lovely pitch, and all of us was soft, even in the summer. It was a lovely pitch to play on. We outgrew that pitch for the simple reason it was one pitch, And we had that many teams. The school teams, the national school, the art school, ladies football was starting, Camogie was starting. So, you know, there was rows. We had a row. We lost our manager of a senior football team over a juvenile team on in front of them. And the man walked out on us because he says, I'm here to train a team. I don't want any juveniles out here tonight. And anyway, we got through and we said, we'll have to get somewhere else, even to rent. So we went looking. And that, we bought that field in 1976. That was the second bit of property that the G owned. And we went on then and we opened that in 1980. With Loud and Offaly playing in, and Clara and Walshine playing in the championship. As you said, it outgrew our needs. So we were all at him looking. And then myself and Eamon Fleming, the Lord of Mercy, were up walking and we were looking and we come down from Clines and we were walking down through the field at Mannerings. Sid was there on a horse. We said to him, is it any hope you're still in the whole field beside you here? He says, make me an offer. I said, we'll have to go back to the committee with that now. And he says, I'll chat to boys at home and that. So we made a deal there and then and bought the field. So then we still had enough room with Marion Square and there. But we said, right, we'll have to get more fields and that's all we can do. So we said, it'd be great if the convent would sell. So the convent came up for sale and we said we'd have a go. I know we probably paid a bit too much for it, but, you know, something comes up and you have to take an opportunity of buying it.
Was it an ambitious project to buy that?
It was. Well, the convent, which we didn't need because it's a big building, but it was all going under one lot. And you either went and bought it or you forgot about it. And I was after living in an era of where you were hard luck stories about field and everything else. And the way I looked at it and the way the committee looked at it, well, we've one shot at this. We'll either get it or we won't get it. And there was going to be enough room there for five fields. We said, right, sure, let's have a go. So we went up to auction then. We thought we'd do a deal with them. And they wouldn't do a deal privately with us. After being in Clara for over 150 years, we went and we bid and we got the field and paying back a good bit of money every month and that. But eventually, anyway, that last committee, when they came in then, we got a deal anyway. The boys got a deal. We set up a deal, but the bank done a write-off through Croke Park. They still have to be paid. It'll take maybe 20 years more to pay. But what difference does it make? The fields are there and the best facilities in Offaly, owned by a club. And the convent can be turned into something terrific in the years to come. Like,
yeah. Is that but something you're very proud of, Mick?
Oh, of course I am.
Would that be the number one thing on your chairmanship that you sailed that ship through that?
Ah, yeah, well, look, I'm delighted I was there when all this happened because I can say I had a hand in all of the things, the purchases up along the way. And to leave it now, which I'd like to have been there maybe a few more, but a time comes and there's a time to go. And you want fresh faces. We came in as fresh lads in the 70s. And fresh lads in again and fresh thinking and that. And you have to move on. And maybe I stopped too long, but I don't mind. We got a lot done. And we won a lot of championships, as Pádraig read out there earlier. Okay. And like my innings, I was very happy that we did so much in the time.
Mick, I have another little piece of audio here from a friend of yours. Have a listen. PJ Rickard.
PJ Rickard here. Just have a few words today about my friend Michael Sheridan. Michael was very passionate about the GAA, and maybe his most lasting legacy is that in the 60 years he's been involved in the club, they've gone from a small club with no property to quite a large property portfolio, and Mick was centrally involved in the purchase of all of these properties. Mick also was involved in other aspects of life, notably the Claret-Headed Hounds. But his passion was always for the GAA. He was involved nationally with SCORE and he was treasurer of the county board in the early 1980s when Offaly had their glory years. Probably the most important thing to say about Mick is that he doesn't bear a grudge. You can have arguments, and I've had many of them with him over GAA policy. They didn't always agree. And no matter how harsh the words were, the minute a decision was made, Mick forgot about it. He never held a personal grudge. And to me, that's a sign of a very good man and a good person. It's a thing that people should know about Mick. It's just to wish Mick well, and he's been a good friend down the earth to me.
Thanks very much, Peter.
That's Peter Rickard. And Mick, tell us all about these rows you had with Peter Rickard.
Ah, look, sure, you'd have rows with everybody, but like rows are rows. That's part of life. But as Peter said, you don't hold grudges. You go on with life, and you meet the fella the next day, and you talk to him, and you say, right, you know, we had a difference about that, but it's gone. Like, you can't live your life looking back. you must look forward all the time. Because life's too short to have enemies, you know. Let them all be your friends eventually. And that was my motto in life. Keep great with everyone. And the amount of friends that I made through TGA, I wouldn't be able to get a notebook and write their all their names down.
Have you any regrets then in all your life in the GEA going around? Will you ever just say to yourself, I have enough of this?
No, really, no. I've no regrets because I said to you before, I was born into a GEA family and I love the GEA. It's great to be involved, even still, to go and go to matches and go up to help out at a gate or whatever you want to do. If they have a function, go down to it and go down there. Great to be hanging on at the bingo and calling numbers and meeting people. And I'd be one of the few to be there from the time the bingo started and that, and they're still there, you know. And I'd know people for 40 years. I always felt that being involved in the GA, it's an Irish organisation and it's there and it helped to form the state. Because it is there, and whether you were Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael or Labour or whatever you were, IRA, both sides, they still played the GA. They forgot the difference and now they played in the match. And that was a great thing that the GA had in its rules that politics never entered it.
Right.
And it was for the founding members to put that in, that you can't bring in politics. And we had that rule in Clara. You didn't discuss politics at meetings or anything else. You couldn't. Some of my greatest friends would be Fianna Fáilers, you know, down the years. And I'd be very great with Brian Cowan and he'd know where I stand and I'd know where he'd stand. And we'd be great friends and still are, and Barry and them all. You have to acknowledge other people's differences in that. And I'd train Brian and I was always delighted to tell people to win a minor championship medal, you know. Back down in Borough, we beat Forbann in Borough, which was an unusual place to have a minor football final. Yeah. But we won that.
So Mick, you spoke fondly there of Brian Cowan and training him to that final down in Borough. Here's a piece from his brother, Barry Cowan.
Delighted, yeah, to contribute to the programme in relation to Mick Sheridan. Mick is an institution in Clara, a brilliant servant of the community. When we Clara people think of the GA, they think of Mick Sheridan. When Clara people think of Mick Sheridan, they think of the Clara GA. Great, proud and committed family man, committed to his club, to his county and country. Served as a player and an official, a great extension, and won many medals, county and Leinster. And a brilliant promoter of the game. Brilliant man to foresee the need to expand the club from Park Breage to Park Frunchies, to expand that again, not only to take in the growing population, but to recognise ladies football and Camogie and the role and the growing role it plays in the community. And it's marvellous to see the activities there centred around the children, especially on regular occasions during the summer and into the autumn. And that's as a result of his foresight, of his commitment, of his dedication. And as I said, a very proud and committed Irishman to culture and, you know, the score and all the other aspects of culture life in Ireland. A great friend. And a great promoter of everything Irish in our community. And I wish him continued good health and happiness in his retirement. Well deserved.
So, Mick, there's a different politics, but a friend nonetheless.
I have very great friends, always. All the towns. And I can remember his grandfather. He was a former chairman at Club Vale, Christy Cowan. Steve's in GA the whole family. His father played and his uncle played and won a Leinster medal in 47. And I've been always great friends of the Cowans and through the GA. And that's the one thing about the GA. It's a great leveller. People meet there and politics are gone out the window. And I'm very happy to hear the contribution there that Barry made to me. It is terrific. And it's great that people maybe see things that did happen, and for the wider community.
Right, and that's a credit to you, Mick. Mick, moving on then, just from that, you've done a lot of other things. Of course, the Tidy Towns was a massive part.
It was, of course, yeah. Like, we had a great Tidy Towns. I was the first chairman of the Tidy Town Committee back in 68, and we did a lot of work around bits and pieces, and it was hard to get people involved, but eventually we got a lot of people involved, and we started a house and garden competition. And we did a great competition. That went for about 10 or 12 years. Different houses. And you won them, plenty of yourselves in Marion Square, Hazelwood. And we had a competition for Marion Square, the Green, the town and the best premises, and Kilcorsi and Raheen, Collinstown, all the areas, Real Review. And it was great old competition of people to knock the gardens.
Everybody took part.
Everyone took part. And then you go out and you try to get the letter and that. But it's great to see so many people interested in the town. But time moves on for everybody and people drift on. But that's one thing about the GA. You can't drift away from the GA. The GA is born into your system.
Mike, we're going to finish off with a quick fire round. Okay.
Have them simple.
Well, they're very simple now. But it's the first thing that comes into your head. Are you ready for this?
Hopeful.
Okay, Mick, the first car you ever bought?
Morris Minor.
First thing you'd buy if you won the lotto?
A big new car.
First movie you've ever seen?
Ah, sure, that'd be Hopping on Cassidy.
What actor would play Michael Sheridan in a film?
I don't think he's born yet. well, let's see now. Who are they? Ah, sure, your man there, Clark Gable.
Leo Varadkar or Enda Kenny?
Ah, Enda was a great leader. Great leader because he was a
we don't need it because. Best thing about Clara?
The friendliness and the people of Clara.
GAA or golf? It's a simple one.
Oh, GAA.
Best player you've ever seen playing for Offaly Football?
Peter Nolan.
And this, the last one, 10, is a £1 million question from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. It's a sporting one now, Mick. Okay, but it's not GAA related, okay? In the history of motorsport, which of these iconic races was held first? Was it A, Le Mans 24 Hour, B, Monaco Grand Prix, C, Indy 500, or D, the Isle of Man TT? So now,
I'd say the Isle of Man TT might be the oldest.
For £1 million?
Yeah, I think so.
That's your final answer?
Yeah.
You've won £1 million.
Very good.
D&G sponsoring this, right, Mick?
When I call for it.
There's like 1907 now for there. Actually, speaking of cars, Frank Feary was on here last week and he said you sold him a Morris 1100. I think he's looking for a refund after that. I know he went down Ireland once, he says.
Well, sure, if he went around Ireland once, he didn't want a 12-year guarantee, did he?
And we have a last piece of audio here, Mick. It's from your grandson, Colm Doyle.
Oh, very good, Colm.
Thanks very much for having our grandfather on this week. Everyone knows him as such a great GA man, and it's always someone who we looked up to. Some people might know that he's a great love of the game of golf, and he'd be a member of the Moat Golf Club and would play golf there nearly every week. And luckily enough, as young lads, he'd always encourage us to go out and play with him and bring us out as much as he could over the summer months. In recent times, we've finally been able to compete with him. But the funniest part of the course would be when you'd get around to Farm Lane on the ninth hole, and you know you'd be getting hungry at this stage now, and Grandad would open up the golf bag and he'd be pulling out the rows of sweets, and you wouldn't know if they were from this year's Christmas or last year's Christmas. You were kind of taking your life in your own hands, whether you were going to take a sweet or not. And then best of all, he'd throw out the banana, and by the time you open it up, you'd want the straw to eat it at that stage. It was gone that bad. As Peter was saying, he wouldn't throw anything out. But thanks again for having him on, and best of luck with all the podcasts in the future.
Now, Mick, that's your
answer. Thanks, Colm. Thanks for the words. Thank you.
Mick, lastly, any advice for Clara's younger generation growing up? You that has seen it all now in your 81st year.
Not yet.
Nearly.
Nearly. The most important thing for people growing up, for boys and girls, is to get involved in sport and keep involved, because the one thing it does, it makes friends. It's great. And I see even the grandkids now, all of them, the friends they've made with the football and the hurling and any sport, no matter what sport it's to be, get involved, stay involved. And when you're finished, give something back to what you enjoyed when you were young.
So, Mick, we normally finish out the podcast with a Clara artist. We're always trying to support our own here on the podcast. So you've picked the song from the vault here, I have on Raheem. Would you like to dedicate it to anybody?
Well, I'd like to dedicate it to a lot of people, really, that helped the GAA down the years, especially our local schools. Without their help, the GAA wouldn't have flourished the way it did. We give help to the schools, but they returned it 100-fold. And that was very important. And as well as that, in score, the way that our teachers all got behind score, even when young teachers came to Clara, they got involved into the score when we asked them, and the three in ballot groups in particular. I'd have to mention, I can't mention everybody, But one teacher in particular, and she's still helping out to this day, is Nora Heenan, for her help. And she worked for years on the committee with us and was a tremendous GA person and still is. You know, all the people, a lot of people have gone that done great work for the GA and died suddenly. I can go back to Fathers and go back to, was a man that missed the opener of the fields in 1980 and was a link between the old committee and our new committee at the time, was Paddy Robbins, who died suddenly, and he was vice chairman of the club at the time. Other people that did tremendous work and went young, too young, Donal Rabbit, who was a great man with a pen and for planning permissions and for drawings and fields when we bought up in Kilcoursey and for dressing rooms. Donal and Donald are work for free of charge to the club, which is a tremendous contribution from Donal and Donal's family. And also, we had John Buckley, another young man that's gone, who was vice chairman as well, and who did tremendous work for all the teams and that. So many people that we lost over the years, and great friends. And I'd like to thank all the people that helped me on different committees over the years. You couldn't mention them all because they go into the hundreds. And people that came when we refereeing as umpires, too numerous to mention as well, over approximately 50 years refereeing. And all the people that helped in any way, the GA club, helping all the functions and the amount of functions that we held in the GA centre from the time we bought it, which is a great help to the town of Clare as well, because without it, there was no hall for a long time in the town. And we held everything there, from mass, funerals, musicals, score, bingo, you name it, we have had them, dances. I also want to mention a couple of other great friends, Eamon Fleming and Jimmy Dunn, the Starical Bride, which is our own song, a great historic place, goes back to St. Bridget, and it's great to see that that cemetery is after being renovated in the last few years. People can go up there now and look around at old graves. That's history, right through Clara.
Okay, so it's our very own Trevor Kavanagh. And Mick, thank you very much once again for being on the podcast.
It is my pleasure, and delighted to ask me. Thank you very much.
One evening last summer, in the gay afternoon, with the meadows all charming and the flowers all in bloom, I chanced for to stray with the lass by my side, to view the old scenes around ancient Kilbride. How sad was my ramble, it caused me some tears, to view the old homestead I dwelt in for years, and all my companions that left Erin's shores, and the friends from the homeland around sweet Ahamore. Now into the graveyard I chanced for to go, to read all the tombstones standing there in a row, while looking around the old abbey I spied, the home of St. Bridget, where she did reside. And the stone at the front, where she did stand, as she blessed the whole place with one wave of her hand. Oh, through the thick bushes, I scarcely could see what lay over the graves where my ancestors sleep. I tried for to read them, but all was in vain. The inscription was washed by the downpouring rain. And as I was leaving the old spot I knew well, I could hear the sweet chimes of the monastery bell. A fair maid approached me, she looked with such pride that I christened her Katie, the Star of Kilbride. That I christened her Katie, the Star of Kilbride.
Hi, Andrew Dignam here from D&G Kelly Duncan, your local estate agents and auctioneers. Our services include property sales, valuations, property lettings and property management. Philip Kelly, our MD, and myself have almost 30 years local expertise and experience. Call us today on 057 93 250 50, or email us on info@dngkellyduncan.com, and you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Thank you all for your continued business locally. Best wishes for 2021, and please stay safe and well.
You just listened to What's the Story with Lloyd Bracken. Check out all our social channels for info on new episodes. Oh, and thanks for listening. On the Town.